The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation. I'm back and we have so much big PlayStation news that Sony brought along for us to discuss this week, including a release date we have been waiting a long time to talk about, then also a delayed release date that we have talked about several times before, but we'll get to all of that in due time. I'm joined this week by Brian Altana.
Hello and beyond.
Beyond, good to see you, Brian. And good also joined too. This week by Mark Medina.
Only Murders in the Building Season 2, Jonathan Dornbush.
I haven't started it. No spoilers.
You haven't started it? What the hell are you doing?
So, I haven't started it. I do love that show. It is wonderful, but I haven't started it. I'm sorry.
I'm very sad right now.
I'm glad we got through the biggest news this week.
Yeah, that's the biggest. No, biggest news is I have watched a disturbing amount of Doctor Who. That's why I haven't been playing games.
What is this? What is happening?
What is this podcast?
Right anyway, I know we do.
We're in the movies and TV section of the show.
Exactly.
Come on, Brian.
It's not like we have the biggest PlayStation game of the year to talk about this week. But no, before we begin, I do want to give just a sort of heads up for everyone. After the last few weeks of everyone being in studio while I was out, a huge thank you to Max and to everyone who was on, like Brian and others who were able to hop in while I was gone. We are going to be remote for a few weeks because of, Comic-Con stuff is starting to happen and prepare for, and our studio just won't be fully up to speed for stuff. So we'll be remote for a few weeks. And also this week, 2/3 of this podcast have COVID. So we
both of you on both sides of me.
Yeah.
Brian is just like
am I quarantined right now in this rectangle?
You're isolated in that box.
This is exactly how you get it. You chose to be in between us. This is how it spreads.
I didn't know that. First of all, I didn't know where you were putting me. This okay. Red's producing the show. Red, next time this happens, can you please put the rectangle 6 feet apart?
Just me and Dornbush together, then Brian in the very
and just
corner.
Off to the side. isolation.
I'm glad we can still hang out. So there we go. There's live footage of me getting sick from both of you.
Obviously obviously are taking as many safety precautions as possible and not going to be in studio as a result of that. But then, for the next few weeks, we'll also be remote because of just, things going on with production and whatnot.
You both look great. You both look great, though.
Well, thank you.
You're doing well. And PlayStation brought you both a beautiful gift today.
They did. The release date for God of War Ragnarok. It's finally
happened. We did it.
Finally!
God of War Ragnarok release date watch 2022 is over for now.
It feels like we accomplished something. We didn't do anything except for wake up and look at Twitter, but it still feels like we all accumulatively accomplished something.
Patience is, I think, that's sure. a thing, right? That's an achievement, right? Or a trophy, I guess, in this game.
There you go. Maybe I should mention the date before we jump too far in, but God of War Ragnarok is coming to PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 November 9th, 2022, mm-hmm. this year. Obviously, there has been, I know we've talked about it on the show for weeks, if not months at this point, there has been all this worry because they've been very quiet about things, that the game was going to be delayed, despite, protests from the devs themselves, including Corey Barlog on Twitter, being like, it's not getting delayed. People mm-hmm. were still worried because it was quiet. One, I think it is worth couching in the context of this as this happened. I think maybe between episodes, or maybe it happened last week as well, but like there has been just a disgusting level of vitriol and abuse thrown at the devs because of people wanting information about the game, and that is never okay. Obviously, anyone out there listening, we hope all of you out there are sane and wonderful and good people, but never do that to devs. You have no excuse or right ever to send harassment toward them because
can we just say it? They were sent. There were a small emphasis on small group of fans were sending pictures of their genitalias to the developers, and three or four days later we get the release date anyway. And so you didn't need to do that. You don't ever need to do that. Nope. Don't ever do that to anybody. And you don't deserve this game if you did that.
Well, and don't think that what everybody's been doing on Twitter is what made this happen. Like, it's such a ridiculous notion. I get really, really heated when I think about the tweets I've seen lately, because it's just like, it's ridiculous. Like, Sony never said that they were about to announce the release date for this game. Like, they didn't say that, and yet them and all the devs are the ones that get all the harassment because some fucking Twitter oracles just say, like, oh, the game's coming next week. It's like, it's so much bullshit. I hate it so much. And there's a reason I have not been on Twitter for, like, 3 weeks.
It's really so frustrating and awful to see. And obviously, we know that it's just a small portion of the audience out there, so not even necessarily of the show. But, you know, people who engaged in that, very small representative of the audience, but a frustrating and disgusting part of it. And it was very, very crappy to see at a time when it should be celebratory for the devs, when they've been working so hard for years on this game. So, you know, I hope we can move forward and just focus on the game. Please, obviously, out there, like, if you're part of this audience, be respectful of devs always. They are working so hard to bring us these magical, amazing worlds.
No amount of nagging or harassment or anything will move this along any further unless you're a shareholder, because then you are the most powerful person in the world of video games. They're the ones that ultimately make all the decisions. They're the ones that ultimately, that's why we got Cyberpunk before it was done. Like, this is like, shareholders are they're the money people, and they have all the power, and we don't. We're just fans. So that said,
it is it's a reminder just to be respectful, be kind to devs, treat them with the respect they deserve, as Mark was saying, as human beings. And but moving on from that, it just had to be said because it was so frustrating and disappointing to see. But on a good side of things, it is so great to finally have this release date out there. Alongside it, we got a short CGI trailer, not new gameplay, and we can kind of talk about that in a second, but showing off Kratos and Atreus, some cool fighting, some cool CGI action there, a tease of a giant wolf who, as if you know Norse mythology, most are assuming is Fenrir, which, story-wise, again, I'm not going to spoil things for people who are maybe just jumping into God of War in the months leading up to Ragnarok, has some interesting complications and implications based on Norse mythology for what Fenrir's inclusion might mean, but we'll get there in due time. But for those who are obviously excited for it, which I assume are many, many out there, pre-orders open up on July 15th. There are several separate editions of the game. Obviously, like the base editions of the game, there's a digital deluxe edition. There's two collector's editions, the collector's edition and the Jotnar edition, both of which come with a replica Mjolnir hammer. Obviously, Thor, we know, is going to be part of this game and be a big player in it. They also come with a bunch of other goodies in there that you can look forward to. I'm just trying to make sure I get them, like a cool Yggdrasil like cloth map is one of them. The Jotnar edition comes with a 7-inch vinyl with music by Bear McCreary, and if it's anything like the score of the first game, it's probably an amazing score for this game.
And if you put it on at home, you'll get all of like your housework done
so quickly.
in very, very interesting ways, just angrily.
you'll get angrily doing dishes. You're like, where's my shirt?
Just like grunting and chanting, ripping your clothes off.
Everything is smashed, but,
in your mind, everything's clean. You're like, your wife walks out, she's like, what are you doing?
Chaos everywhere.
Boy.
But they come with a few cool other additions as well. You can check all of that stuff out. We have sort of a buyer's guide on IGN if you want to look for things. And they also, PlayStation themselves did an unboxing with, I believe, the actor behind the voice and motion mm-hmm. capture for Thor, I believe both, and as well as Raf Grossetti from Sony Santa Monica, who does incredible art both at Santa Monica and just on his Twitter feed, incredible artwork all the time.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
You know, so we've got those special editions to look forward to. I think that's really cool. One thing
can I point out something real quick about those special editions? I think it was interesting. The biggest one comes with a steelbook, but doesn't come with a physical copy of the game, but it does come with a digital copy of the game. And like we've seen the big sort of high-end special edition collector's editions the last few years omit the physical copy of the game. I have a feeling that's because there's, you know, the kind of handshake between the production lines of big, you know, statues and all that other fun stuff, or in this case an axe, and the discs that go gold that have to be shipped out separately and done in separate places are just happening at different places at different times, and this pairs down on leaks and stuff like that. So I think if you do get this early, if a realtor
if you're going to buy a house
and you see one of these in there and you steal it, the game code probably won't work for you until the game officially unlocks, whereas a disc you'd probably be able to play immediately, right? So I see that a lot. So if you do buy the big one, you will get a steelbook, but you will have to still, if you want a physical version of the game to put in that case, you'll have to buy that separately or redeem the code and then just hope no one ever looks in that steelbook, and you and I will keep that a secret.
It's a weird trend, and I think a bummer of a trend for people who are the physical collectors, like the people who are buying it to have that nice physical display case and to be able to have that disc. And obviously people feel very strongly, if they're physical collectors, about having that disc, especially with the way, you know, digital media can be so ephemeral. So it's a weird trend and always a bummer to see, but I think you're right. I do think a big part of it, other than also potentially probably getting people to double down and buy a game twice, is because, they can put this box together months in advance in a way that they can't until the disc is done, and discs, you know, have to wait for the game to go gold, and that often now happens within a month of a game happening. So
these are already probably a month out from getting like packaged together.
Exactly.
Like they've already got one built here, as you can
see, to do an unboxing. So
you know what's funny though is I actually have a lot of steelbooks that just don't have games in them, because eventually Best Buy will just clearance them out for like a dollar.
Oh, right.
And they don't charge shipping. And so I have like a Fallout 76 one, I have a Resident Evil one, I have like two Cyberpunk ones, because I'm just like a dollar and there's like no shipping and I just buy them. So it works out for me. I'll probably eventually get this steel case.
It's always a nice case. I have the original God of War's case and it is beautiful. One thing I do want to mention off of this, because obviously, as I said, we didn't get a lot of gameplay, and I do kind of want to talk about expectations for the game going forward. But for me, the hammer being a big part of this collector's edition, not only do I think, you know, we're going to probably have Thor be a big prominent person, I don't think he's going to just show up for 2 minutes, but we're going to get to hold Mjolnir, right? Like, that's going to be a weapon you get, right?
I hope so, yeah.
That's what my feeling is.
Yeah, I mean, if you can only hold it by buying the big box version, then, like, that's kind of a letdown. But I do think that that's going to be, you know, like, there were items that, or weapons that they held back from fans and the press in the last game, which I guess, can we talk about?
I mean, at this point, so old, I would...
I guess literally light on the spoilers.
They were on the screen.
But anyway, I think Kratos would get his hands on a lot of this stuff. I don't know about the dice. We'll see. But
I mean, there might be a dice minigame.
You just never know.
Yeah.
In a world where I'm like, what are the dice for? Yeah, there's probably some sort of minigame. Horizon ended up putting a minigame in their game. So,
it seems
to be the trend. I do remember in the last game, we were all in office because it was in the before times in 2018. And I remember when I got the weapon, are we really doing that?
We still feel like we're,
it still feels weird because I feel like so many people are going to be playing this game for the first time now. I remember we used to have capture bays in our office, and I just like locked myself in one of those because I was like, if any of my coworkers who are not playing the game yet even see my screen, they're going to get this huge thing spoiled for them. And I kind of expect this to kind of be the same way, where it's like they're going to kind of like hint at it a few times, and then eventually it's like, boom, you get Thor's hammer and it's going to be insane. But that's just speculation. We don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure. But it fits so perfectly. I think, like, you have the Leviathan Axe of Ice. You have another weapon of another element. Mjolnir would be lightning, and of course, like, you have the Leviathan axe, which already comes back to you. That is a key thing that we all, like, think about with Mjolnir now, as it, you throw it and it comes back to you, so it's kind of already built into the game.
Mm-hmm. Dornbush is just reading the back of the box right now. You have Leviathan, ice axe, and another weapon.
And other
of weapons. Another element on the periodic table.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
So, go ahead, Brian.
No, I was going to say, you were hinting at it before, the lack of gameplay today. They went with a cinematic trailer instead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was an interesting choice. Because it feels like when we've seen gameplay of this game, first of all, it looks awesome. Second of all, it's largely a known quantity because it's basically built off of the amazing foundation that the original game put in. That was that one game of the year that year. One of my favorite games ever. I don't think there's one of my favorite video game endings ever, for sure. And there was also a lot of backlash where people were kind of like, oh, they reused animations and blah, blah, blah. So I wonder if they're like, if there's stuff they're also keeping a secret about there, you know?
I think there's a lot being held back. Yeah, that whole frustrating reuse animations thing is, every time it gets dragged up, it's like, God, the amount of work that goes into the cool animations, just let alone, of course, you want to reuse the cool animation.
I don't get that, though. Horizon Forbidden West was mostly like her rappel down and stuff like that. Those are identical to the first game. Did those, because I've been seeing that a lot on Twitter as well. People are like, oh, this is just DLC. And it's like, I'm sorry, did Forbidden West feel like DLC? But a big portion of that game is just reused animations from the first game. That's, you want them to fully rebuild the game every single time there's like a sequel? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Mark, tomorrow, when you wake up and you go get Starbucks, I want you to do like a completely different walk cycle. And then when you pay for it, you got to get like all crazy with your arms and then drink it differently than you ever have.
Drive my car there backwards.
Yeah, every movement every day should be brand new.
Complain that the employees look the same as they did the day before. It's the same models being used in store.
Are they ever going to update these aprons?
Exactly. It's a very weird thing, but I think, like, from what we've seen, the game looks beautiful.
The puddle.
Oh my God. I think part of the reason they held back the gameplay was like, because the release date was enough here.
Yeah.
My Yeah. My assumption is, I'm curious to hear what you both think, kind of like, from here until November 9th, what else are we going to get of the game? Because I agree, I think they're going to hold a lot back. I think they're going to be very secretive, because I think they want people to be excited. And like you said, it's a known quantity. I think we get a state of play. I think we get a 15-minute gameplay thing. And that's, other than maybe one other like launch trailer, I don't think we're going to get a ton more.
No, we'll get a state of play. That's this has become par for the course for them, for their big, you know, AAA flagship titles at this point. Nice mug, Dornbush.
Thank you. Again? It's from 2018 God of War.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, the Kratos.
Oh, nice.
For those, he's got the gold God of War mug. Yeah, I think we'll absolutely get a state of play. And what sucks is, like, I don't know if I want to look at a lot of it.
I know.
And like, so I, on the show a couple years ago, I was like, I don't know if I need a sequel to this game because the first one was so perfect. And a lot of fans, you know, rightfully pointed out that there's a lot of narrative loose ends and, you know, stuff that's unresolved conflicts at the end of the first game that are absolutely worth exploring. So I'm ready to go back in. It's been long enough. But yeah, I don't know if I want any more story stuff spoiled, because I generally have an idea of how, like, exploration and combat will flow. I'm sure the world will be bigger. There'll be more branching paths and stuff like that. More kind of like the smaller sandboxy areas. Like there are some parts in the original God of War that were like totally optional that you could just boat to and just fight a bunch of tough ass dudes for a while. And so that's all well and good. I don't know if I need to learn so much more about the story. I'm just so happy we're playing this game this year. So
yeah. Yeah. Same. What about you, Mark?
I think a state of play is probably inevitable, of course, but I also have a lot of hope that there's eventually going to be some sort of summer showcase. And, you know, hopefully maybe they'll show something there as well. Maybe something smaller. That's where they showed God of War last year. That's where they kind of revealed, you know, not revealed it. They revealed it with that logo the year before, but that's kind of where they showed the gameplay and all that stuff for the first time. So I have to assume that there's some sort of like summer showcase, especially because the next story, which is we're going to talk about Forspoken, they say in their thing, you know, more to show this summer. Like, I have to assume, like, Sony still has some sort of, like, lid to blow off that's going to start up next year. So, I don't know. We could see it there, but I can't imagine that they still wouldn't. Even if they show God of War there, I still expect that there's going to be a dedicated state of play once we get closer. But it's, I mean, it's still, the release date is, what, 5 months away? So, like, still plenty of time to kind of trickle these things out.
I think we're done with summer showcases from them. We got the one at the beginning of June, it feels like
it was, I think, ago. Beginning of June was that state of play. Yeah.
You think that's it for the summer?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, they had some first party stuff in there. They had some great third party stuff. Like, that was an awesome show. So, I think with that, and they're notorious nowadays for just like for every state of play they do, there's like five unceremonious blog posts that just drop a ton of information on a random, you know, Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. So like PSVR 2, I believe, was revealed in a blog post. Like, it was sometimes they just do that stuff now. So I don't know if we'll get another dedicated like 22-minute show of a bunch of different games kind of glued together. But I do think that you'll get a couple of like trailers for like, you know, the Spider-Man port coming to PC and stuff like that. You'll get a couple of little things like that. Maybe another peek at some PSVR 2 stuff, but I don't think we're going to get another big kind of like event size thing before the God of War state of play.
And Mark, your expectation is for me,
I think I would be surprised. I would be surprised if that was it, only because like they've never missed a showcase, right? They've done E3, and then since then they've done not a state of play, but an actual PlayStation showcase. So this would be the year to miss, only because it's like we do already know like every hand that they have to play, right? Like, there's not a showcase this year would be dedicated almost certainly to what's coming next year. So I guess if they were to miss one, this would be the year. I would still somewhat be surprised if they were like, well,
they did say they're not part of Gamescom or Jeff Keighley's Opening Night Live thing. And so maybe they're saving something for themselves. The thing is nowadays is that like, it is so hard to predict any of this anymore, because this year, especially, like, all the rules are broken. Like, no one is even being like, oh, should we do like a gentleman's handshake and do like a pretend E3? Like, there was, you know, like, everyone, all eyes were on Nintendo and Sony all through June, right onto the last minute. Oh, we're going to get a State of Play. We're going to get a Nintendo Direct. And Nintendo was like, here's a third party Direct with some of our friends and enemies or whatever. And then our partners and allies. And then Sony said nothing. They just said nothing. And then they put up a blog post today. So like all bets are off, right? It's a different world now. All the things that used to work are not in place anymore. And it's bittersweet because it means we get cool stuff all summer long, but I did miss the kind of like the eventized feel of having a bunch of stuff kind of closer together, you know?
Well, yeah, I was in LA.
Go ahead,
Sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, like, I was in LA for Summer of Gaming, and it's like every event that we did, right? Xbox and then Capcom. It's like you want every single one of them to be like the biggest thing, right? And they were all like, okay. I thought the Xbox one was really good, but like I thought Capcom was like just okay and stuff like that. And then Square Enix is like, hey, we're going to do like a 10-minute show. And that ended up being my favorite showcase of the entire summer so far, only because I'm a huge Final Fantasy fan. So to be able to see Crisis Core and Remake 2 and all that stuff. And so it's like, I agree with you when you say like, there are just no more rules anymore, because it's like,
Ubi announced one for September yesterday.
Right.
Like it's all over the place.
That's the weird thing is, and also it's that funny thing of, I think of September as fall, but technically most of it is still summer until the end of it. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, they have been doing...
When you're in school in September, fall. You're not like, it's summer.
Exactly.
Like, this sucks.
Summer is when I'm not at school.
That. Yeah.
If they're going to do a showcase, I think September is the most likely, because that's when they've been doing their big ones the last couple years. And it can be one that's very forward-looking. It can be one that has a... last minute, you know, Last of Us Part 1 is out. Here's a last, you know, God of War tease. And then they can do what comes in 2023 and after. Because that's what, you know, the last one was pretty focused on the year, if not 2 years ahead. Because that was Spider-Man 2, Wolverine, which is at least 2024 at the earliest, possibly even later. KOTOR Remake, God of War, which obviously was ended up being this year, and smaller games that were this year as well. So that wasn't really a big, like... here's what's coming in the fall showcase. That was, you know, there was some stuff that was closer, but it was really a here's forward looking. So if they do anything, I think a September showcase like that is most likely. But I also do agree, Brian, like it's kind of the thing that we've lived by at this point is there are no rules. Like just because Sony did that the last 2 years doesn't mean they will for sure. It's the most likely because that's just kind of what they've said as their expectation. But who knows? They do also have to start showing PSVR 2 at some point, presumably if that's early next year. You know, they got to start rolling that out. Does that get as part of a showcase? Does that get its own dedicated thing? But yeah, I think we get a God of War State of Play in the like late summer, early fall, like somewhere, I'd say somewhere probably post Tealu, somewhere in that window of like late September, early October, like really get people energized. And then it's November. It comes out at the beginning of it. But until then, yeah, I think the rest of the summer, like July and August are typically pretty quiet otherwise. So I wouldn't expect a showcase before September, in my opinion, at the earliest.
They're in a unique spot right now, and that is that they are by, you know, sort of like battle royal rules, like the one of the last big games standing this fall. Pretty much everything else got pushed out. There were games like Breath of the Wild 2 that never really had release dates that got pushed to next year. Starfield did have a release date, originally supposed to launch 2 days after God of War. That got pushed to next year. There's not like this went from being a year that last year we were all like, this is gonna be huge, and a bunch of stuff fell out. And so now, like, they're in a really interesting spot where they are by default, and, you know, not just saying that they only got there because it's by default, because God of War is a huge game. The first one sold a ton, critically acclaimed, like I said, won our game of the year, amazing game. But it is now probably the biggest single player game this fall, and arguably this year outside of Elden Ring, which is suddenly going to make for a very interesting end of the year, game of the year conversation. Because I think, like, I've been making a bunch of jokes on Twitter all year long. Every time a game gets delayed, I'm like, God, you know, Elden Ring wins game of the year by default. And now things get interesting because who knows? There's the recency bias that comes with people just beating a game. So if they beat, you know, Ragnarok and they go game of the year and they forget Elden Ring that came out, you know, 10 months earlier or something like that, because that's a February game. That could make things really interesting for a lot of press, for a lot of YouTubers, for a lot of influencers, for a lot of fans. Like, that conversation gets very, very interesting now that there's this big, huge, hopefully amazing single player game that launches this fall.
Yeah,
I can't wait. I was tweeting about it this morning as well. Like, I cannot wait for our discussions for this. Because, like, it can't score. Not that scores mean anything when it comes to our game of the year. And when we say game of the year, we mean IGN's game of the year. It can't score higher than Elden Ring, right? Elden Ring already got a 10. So even if Ragnarok gets a 10, you're like, cool, all right, that's two 10s. But, like...
But it's a newer 10, though, a fresh 10.
I know. That is what's going to be the strangest thing, is, like, are people going to remember that Elden Ring is incredible, right? Because, like, I don't want to say, like, snubbed or whatever, but I know a lot of people on staff were, like, kind of, like, upset that, like, Hitman didn't get the recognition it deserved because it came out in, like, January, the year that it came out, Hitman 3 specifically, and it's, like, there are people screaming from the rooftops being like, guys, remember that Hitman 3 was incredible? And people are like, nah, I don't remember that. You know, it's just kind of like a trend that most of the time the game of the year does come out towards the fall. But God of War 2018 came out in March 2018. So
Elden Ring beats your ass by design. And so a lot of people don't like, I love that. But a lot of people are like, when I sit down after like working 100 hours this week or I'm tired or whatever, I don't want a game where I just have to fight, you know, Malekith the undead breath fart or whatever.
Cursed punish.
Put some respect on that breath fart.
And I love all that, right? Like, and so, but I know that there are a lot of people out there that are just like, cool, awesome, looks great, not for me. Whereas God of War, I think like, you'll be able to drop that game. If you're like a fan and you're just tired and you just want to play through the story, you'll be able to experience that. Whereas it's like Elden Ring,
there's an earlier moment where you hit the power fantasy, whereas Elden Ring like puts you through its paces to hit the power fantasy. And even then you still get knocked against. And obviously, you know, we'll have to see how great Ragnarok is and how it both builds on the original, tries to do its own thing, is able to come to all of that. I think Elden Ring won't be forgotten. I think it will just be a question of, one, recency, two, you know, as much as there was also love for Elden Ring, I do think the time has also let some people sit with it and find things to pick at more, because the more time you have with something, it is, and that doesn't mean they don't still love it, but you get to more critically analyze a thing over months versus a 2-3 week period, especially by that point in the year. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see, but it does make for a really, really exciting fall for us, especially for PlayStation, because PlayStation tends to not do big fall releases as often as the others. And now we have The Last of Us Part 1 in September and God of War Ragnarok in November. And that's a pretty big fall for them.
I'm not going to lie, I keep forgetting about Last of Us just because I don't imagine I'm going to really play it much.
Well, I feel less ambivalent about that game now. And like, I think, first of all, I think the Last of Us remake is a good idea for people who haven't played the original or want to replay it. Right. I don't need to do that whole song and dance again.
Sure.
But I think that like, now that it's no longer their flagship title for fall 2022 and they have a bigger one right around the corner, that takes the heat off of The Last of Us a little bit. And you can look at that more as like, okay, this is a really cool project for the people who are interested in it, and not like, this is your big game this fall, because you have that. Now you have that too.
Well, and I think Tilu is going to be just fine. I do think that game is a future bet more than anything. And so that is people get excited by the HBO show next year. People want to return to The Last of Us when maybe Part 2 gets a PS5 patch or a director's cut or whatnot. Like, people are, the multiplayer game comes out and they want to revisit it and here's the best new version. Like, that is a future bet in such a big way. Whereas it's just a nice bonus, I think, for this fall. But yeah, the eyes are going to be on Ragnarok, but I'm excited to play both. But a game we won't be playing this fall any longer is Forspoken. Forspoken got delayed. Same morning as the God of War release date announcement, got delayed to January 24th, 2023. This one was originally supposed to come out in October of this year. I believe October 18th was the original release date, and I'm just pulling up their full statement, so forgive me if you heard any clicks. For some reason, the image on Twitter says it might have sensitive content. It doesn't. The full statement from Forspoken, it's an interesting one that I do want to talk about, is, quote, "As a result of ongoing discussions with key partners, we have made the strategic decision to move the launch date of Forspoken to January 24th, 2023. All game elements are now complete and development is in its final polishing phase. We'd like to thank you for your continued support and patience on this journey. Your excitement for the game inspires us every day, and we cannot wait to share more about Forspoken with you later this summer. That puts it now. I think, you know, one, I tweeted about this a little earlier. I think January is a much better time for this game because it's a brand new franchise, one that they want, obviously, to be a franchise. Putting that out in the middle of the fall, even a one that people perceive as a lighter one, but it's starting to get pretty busy, I think is not a great timing for a new franchise. Whereas January is a good time. That is a very good time to launch something new. It is a within a day of the Dead Space remake. So, you know, two big games to juggle there, but very different games at that point. Brian, I want to start with you. I think one, you know, just in general, it's not surprising that Forspoken has been delayed because this isn't the first delay or anything. But what do you make of sort of the way that they phrase this delay? Because I think it's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. But I do think you just nailed the or hit the nail on the head, nailed the head on the nail in that January is a perfect time for a game like this to have a little bit of room to swim around. People get new consoles for Christmas and the holidays and stuff like that. They get gift cards. They start the new year and they want new stuff to play. And this is going to be big for them. And like you said, like Dead Space is the only real big one confirmed for January, I believe, as of right now. Because we know we got the Redfall and Starfield delays, but those are just first half of 2023, right? And 2023 is obviously starting to shape up. Yeah. And so none of those have like confirmed release dates. I don't think they want to stick to any of those either way. But especially if you're just on PlayStation 5, those aren't your concern anyway, right? And so if you're looking for big new games to play, you finally, somebody in your family has managed to get you a PS5 for Christmas this year or whatever it is, you'll have some cool games to play in January. So I'm all into that. And you know what? Like this is a month where I probably would have ignored this game had it launched, you know, between a couple other bigger ones this fall, which there aren't a ton of, but still. Whereas in January, when I'm just kind of like, so what are we doing this year? Oh, okay. Well, I'll play this. I got space for this right now. I got time for this. So I'm into it. It is interesting that this, obviously they didn't time this, right? Like no one communicated. Nobody was like, oh, we're going to delay this game. And we're also going to announce the release date for God of War Ragnarok, the same 30 second window. And also Frogun. I don't know if you guys saw that game.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, Frogun got a release date. It's August. Okay. I thought it was very cute. They slipped that one in between everything.
But no, you're right. I was just looking up just to confirm. And yeah, those are the only two. I think it's like 3 days between the two of them, Dead Space and this, of any sort of big January release. And also, as you mentioned before I jump to you, Mark, they do, in the statement, you alluded to this earlier, say, well, you'll see more later this summer. That could be for a showcase. That could just be Square doing its own thing. It could be at Opening Night Live, at Gamescom. That could also be, that might be a good potential place for people to get hands-on. I know there's been a hands-off preview before, but that could be a big sort of coming out for the game. But Mark, what do you make of the sort of reasons that they've talked about this delay and how you feel about its chances?
Yeah, I mean, I think you don't see very many games delayed with the language that this game was delayed in. There's nothing about like, you know, hey, we just need a little bit more time. You've seen a lot lately, which is very, very good, which is like, hey, we want to be able to give our devs a good quality of life. So we're, instead of making people crunch, we're going to give them a few more months to finish their game. Like they actually specifically say in their thing, hey, like this game is done
for the most part.
We just have to polish it. Strategic, obviously, is the big word here. That's the thing is like games have marketing and I can see... They have their fall games, right? We just talked about that for the past 3.5 hours, I assume. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been that long. Yeah.
Things are getting fuzzy. But like they have their big fall games, right? But do they have their big spring game? And that's still winter. But like do they have their big January, February game? Because like that is becoming one of the most important times of the year now, right? Like with Elden Ring and Horizon and I can't even remember what else. A million games came out during that time. Sifu and so like they're probably looking, they're probably being like, hey, in a time where there's already not that many games, we have our big fall games. We need our big next year games and that's where we're gonna put Forspoken. Like it's really like this is just unneeded, right? Because you have to assume that Redfall is going to be right around the corner and possibly Breath of the Wild, so they don't have anything of that caliber, but they have this, so that's where they're going to put it.
I think that phrasing was interesting. All game elements are now complete and development is in its final polishing phase. That's pretty cool. Like that makes it seem like there are the delays where you hear about where you're like, oh, like everything has collapsed in on itself. Nothing is working. You know, the enemy, the characters are falling through the earth. Like it seems like they've are architecturally built every single asset that needs to go in this game, and they put them all together. And now they're just making sure that it's not a glitchy mess, which is like, that's a good kind of delay. And I like that line too about like they're inspired by the excitement of the fans. Like that powers them every day. It's really cool. So
yeah, it's a 3 month addition to polish, which is stuff, you know, we'd probably see patches after the fact happen. They get to help solve this stuff before launch. And yeah, like Mark, to your point, they'll need stuff in the spring. Square and Sony both have like very busy falls. Again, even if we kind of talk about like, I think the perception of a light fall, like Square has planned for the end of 2022 as of now at least 5 games on the docket, including for PlayStation. Like Valkyrie Elysium is coming in September. There's the Diefeld Chronicle, which is still set for this year. There's a couple other games that I'm blanking on just for the moment. Crisis Core this winter as well, and then a few other things both on PlayStation and elsewhere. So Square has a busy fall to already plan things for. And then on the PlayStation side, Tealou is going to get so much of their love for September, God of War in November. And then if they both hit still this year, PlayStation, as far as we know, because of their investor docs, is also seeing Hogwarts Legacy and Avatar Frontiers of Pandora as two big upcoming third-party games that they're kind of putting their marketing muscle behind. So that's, that is four massive games potentially for PlayStation to juggle in a three-month period. This is a brand new franchise. It's not attached to anything that's well-known. It is a bit of a risk. It has sort of had an up-and-down cycle of promotion. Putting that in January when people are hungry for a new thing, like you were saying, Brian, way better chance of success than middle of October.
Yeah, go for it.
I was just going to say, I'll never forget, and nobody will ever forget, Titanfall 2, right? Like coming out between Battlefield and that year's Battlefield and that year's Call of Duty. It came out, it was like 3 weeks in a row, and Titanfall just, will always be remembered as the game that was just kind of like there. And, Respawn has already said, like, they've said, like, it sucks that kind of happened, right? Like that they weren't able to delay out of that window. And, being in media as long as we've all been, like you kind of see like the market share games get just at our website by themselves, right? Like I help run the gameplay team. And when I think about how big Elden Ring was and how big Horizon was, games like Tiny Tina's Wonderlands and stuff like that, we just completely skipped. That's a game I would kill to come out right now. Because it would give us, it would get so much like press behind it, right? Because like, there's nothing else competing with it. Like Stray is just going to be the biggest game ever, right? Like that's all anyone's going to be playing this month, that and the Bear Cafe game. But it's like, if you can take a big game like Forspoken, like exactly what Brian's saying is like something you may not have played, right? And now you'll play it because in January you'll have nothing else to play. Like yeah. I would love for it to be just more spread out like that all the time.
Well, there's this like weird game of chicken with different publishers. And I don't, everybody starts the year sort of understanding where things are going to land. Call of Duty has always been the big one you want to avoid in the fall, right? Battlefield occasionally. But for the most part, this year has been like very surprising in that regard, because I don't think anyone would have predicted a few years ago, finishing up Dark Souls 3 that like or Sekiro that like the game that studio would make after would go on to become one of the biggest hits of the decade in video games, the biggest hit that studio has ever made by far, and probably changing the course of what they're going to work on for years to come. And so like no one could have predicted any of that. And I think also when you look at like even now, like you Google 2023 release dates, right, and you look at everything for each month, most of those are going to move, or a bunch of those are going to move. Just the same way when you started the year in January and you're like, here's what's happening this year, so much of that stuff exploded and the shrapnel landed in different parts of this year and next year. And so it's so hard to predict that. And I'm sure like the Tiny Tina Wonderland people were probably like, man, I didn't know this year was going to be like that. Like this summer, yeah. Everyone, like the, like most of my friends this summer are just like, they're going through their backlogs. They're playing a couple old things here and there. Mark, you're playing Fortnite. Like people, people are just like, you know, they're going back to comfort food, maybe catching up on some indies that they haven't really played, or like playing stuff that they, you know, that they haven't, they didn't get to finish before. But like in terms of big AAA new games, we're not really seeing a ton of those right now. And so there were a lot of open spaces that I don't think people really saw existing when they were planning out, you know, their marketing calendars for the start of this year. And the same thing's going to happen next year.
Yeah.
I feel like next year is going to be insane. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we say that every year now. It's like, ooh, but next year, guys, is going to be big. But next year probably is going to be pretty big.
I mean, I think next year will be big, but I do also think, like, to Brian's point, a lot of stuff is going to also move. I think, you know, there's a lot to look forward to. Some of those big games are going to get pushed to the end of the year. Some delay complications may happen. Like, devs are still working through COVID. They're adapting still to brand new consoles. And just general development is a very tough thing to, you know, contend with in a normal situation. So I think we're going to continue to see delays. I think we're going to... It is going to be a big year, but I think we'll see some stuff push. And then there's also always the surprises. You know, I started this year not expecting that Ollie Ollie World was going to be one of my favorite games of this year, but it is. And then there's awesome indies that pop up throughout the year, like Sifu and Stray. And then we've got Rollerdrome next month and Season coming up in the fall.
Oh, you know what? I said I wasn't going to do one of the what we're playing right now, but you're opening the door. I forgot. Oh, no. Neon White is it's awesome. Sorry, that's the second time I've cussed on this podcast. It's COVID talk. That's the COVID cussing. Neon White is awesome. If people aren't playing that game, you should play it. Mainly because I love speedrunning, but holy smokes, that game is so much fun.
I do want to get to that one at some point. But yeah, it helps to be able to get a small game. Speaking of small games, my favorite game actually of last year, Inscription, was recently rated for PlayStation. And if you didn't play Inscription because it was only on PC and it comes to console, play Inscription. Do not read a thing about it. Just go
I've
play.
Still never played that game.
Don't,
I probably should.
Don't look up anything about it and just go play.
Don't play it.
Don't play.
Just don't.
Don't it's play my favorite game.
That is my game.
How dare you? But no, yeah, we'll see what happens. This year it's Star Ocean, Crisis Core, Valkyrie Elysium, and DFL Chronicle are all PlayStation stuff happening, Square Enix stuff happening that are all releasing on PlayStation. So,
And Forspoken, Brian mentioned we'll Call of Duty. Yeah. Call of Duty is usually Sony market aligned as well.
Yeah, yeah. They still have that going on.
And this is the last Call of Duty for until 2024. So
this is actually the last Call of Duty ever. They're shutting
it
down. Yep.
Not ever.
They're closing the doors on the war machine. It's over.
It does feel weird that there's not going to be a Call of Duty this year. It puts a weird... I don't know.
Is there
No, they've already.
You mean next
year? There's one this year.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
Modern Warfare 2 this year and then nothing next year. It's super strange. It feels like it's over, boys. Gaming is done. Call of Duty's thrown in the towel, we're done.
I think we've had enough of them.
No disrespect for Call of Duty fans.
One
like,
Call of Duty. Call of Duty
You're such
two.
A big fan. I mean, I feel a little weird that there's no big Assassin's Creed because it's now been a couple years at this point, but
that
it's also good for that to... there's not going to be a big new Assassin's Creed this year.
But Ubisoft, they're going to announce the new Assassin's Creed game.
For next year. I think the big hope right now, if there was anything AC this year, would be the small hope of a 1 remake that I've seen kind of floating about, but other than that, I don't think there's a new AC this year. Their big release for this fall is, right now, Skull and Bones, Sparks of Hope, and potentially Avatar. So they do have a busy fall.
I forgot about the Mario Rabbids game, and I thought that they added a subtitle to Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones,
Sparks of Hope, which is surprisingly fitting for that game.
That's the one of those three you forgot about, not Avatar?
Max isn't on the show this week.
I just love this idea. Skull and Bones, Sparks of Hope that somebody will play this game.
We are recording before the Skull and Bones re-reveal this week, by the way, for those listening maybe a day or two late. So any commentary on that game we'll have to save for next week. But yeah, we'll see, especially with that September showcase coming up, as you mentioned earlier, Brian. We'll see what that means for PlayStation players. Mm-hmm. But moving on from there, just to quickly mention some other news, I do want to mention, I think it broke in between shows, so forgive me if I'm repeating from last week. Brian, you can just tell me to shut up. Sucker Punch came out after months and months of people trying to say there were new games being made on their franchises, including Infamous and Sly Cooper. Nothing ever official from PlayStation, but that didn't stop, as we've said, hope and rumors spreading because people love those series. Hope. Sparks of hope.
New sparks of hopes, yeah.
New Sly Skull Cooper and Bones from hope. Spreading for people in the fandoms. But
infectious.
Sucker Punch came out with a blog post kind of talking about some of their legacy games and how they're keeping support on some of those servers and kind of expectations for that stuff. But in it, they also confirmed to kind of quell any expectations that there are no Infamous or Sly Cooper games in development with them or other studios as of this time. Mm-hmm. You know, as they say never, we could see these series come back. I think any IP that is well known ever has a chance of being revived at some point by a media conglomerate, because that's just how entertainment works these days. But for now, don't expect one. I'm crushed as a Sly Cooper fan, but I also didn't put too much stock into those rumors because, again, they weren't coming from Sony. They weren't coming from the devs kind of talking about things. We know Sucker Punch is a small studio and they only really have time for one game. It's gonna be a Ghost of Tsushima sequel. Like, that is obviously what their focus is.
Like, they know that that's the studio that made the very good game Ghost of Tsushima, right? Like, why wouldn't they make more of that?
The biggest selling new IP for Sony, I think, of the PS4 generation, did huge. They're making a movie. That's going to be what they're focused on. Other studios are not working on those games as well at the moment. It's a bummer, I think, but I think it is better for it to be out there for people to stop sort of this rumor mongering from happening, to stop that stuff from spreading. So don't expect that stuff anytime soon. Don't expect a surprise. And if it happens, then you get to be delighted. And that's kind of the best way to approach these things.
I really, really loved Infamous Second Son. I loved playing that when it first came out, like, and the PS4 still had that new car smell. Like, I loved all of that so much. Ghost of Tsushima is one of my favorite games ever made. And so I'm happy to get another sequel to that. Like, if you look at, like, just based on the numbers, the amount of Sly Cooper games we've gotten, the amount of Infamous games we've gotten, and the amount of Ghost of Tsushima games we've gotten, it's okay if they, like, kind of level those playing fields a little bit. But I do like that they weren't, like, we're never, ever making those things again. Like, they basically said, you know, never say never, there's a chance. So, ideally, a really cool thing would be, you know, that's the sequel to Ghost blows up like the first one did. The studio expands, hires more people, or they connect with some kind of third party studios that can help them remaster or port some of their classic games in their legacy catalog. And you'll get to see those things again. Cause I think that, like, getting to experience like the Infamous games or the Sly Cooper games in like PS5 graphics would be super cool. And so I do hope we get there eventually. I don't necessarily need brand new entries in those franchises over a Ghost of Tsushima sequel, which is like, that's the thing I want more than anything right now.
Yeah, they're series I both love, like you. Yeah, I think Second Son was such a wonderful, like, first kind of entry on PS4 to really get into. I've adored the Sly Cooper franchise for forever and wish it still was prominent, but there's a reason they're focusing on certain things. If they were that in demand, they probably would have spun something up by now, like if they thought the money was there. So for now, don't expect anything. Maybe one day, like they said, it could happen, but Ghost of Tsushima will probably come and we'll all be blown away by it in hopefully just a few years.
That's the title.
I really hope so too. It's definitely not weird at all to have to say. Other things just to very much briefly mention, as we said, Ubisoft is holding that multi-show showcase in September. We'll obviously cover anything big out of that show in a couple months. And also for anyone who's maybe been holding out hope, as I know some people have for future Bully installments, there was a report that allegedly, Rockstar hasn't confirmed it, but that allegedly Red Dead Redemption 1 and GTA 4 could have had remasters, could have had, you know, bump ups, but that allegedly those projects have been shelved in order for the studio to focus on GTA 6. Unsurprisingly, they are focusing on the thing they know is going to make them $100 bajillion. Bums me out because GTA 4 was my first GTA and I love that game dearly. Brian, I know you're a big fan of it as well. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to have parody of Red Dead 1 and 2 on modern consoles to be able to play easily without having to stream via PS3 or the backward compatible version on Xbox, but that just doesn't seem to be in the cards right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wonder if that, well, first of all, like, this is frustrating because I love GTA 4, like I said before, and it's also like it's sort of like it's this weird kind of forgotten, it's weird to call it a forgotten game because it's sold billions, But the amount of times we've seen ports or remasters of all the other games in the GTA series, or most of all of them, and the attention that's been put on GTA 5 with new content over the last decade, it's kind of frustrating that they didn't, again, throw this to a studio that could modernize it a little bit and put it on new consoles. I know that that's like, you know, armchair game dev over here, just being like, throw money at it. But if there's any company that can throw money at it, it's Rockstar, right? And so, like, I don't necessarily think this is one of those things where they're like, they're taking all of their resources and they're funneling directly into GTA 6. Like, this, there's, to me, there isn't a universe where a port of GTA 4 or a remaster detracted from the content that could go into 6, right? That said, the remasters we got of the GTA trilogy were like notoriously kind of shoddy right out of the gate. And they did like fix them up a little bit, but they ended up, and this is gross, but they ended up selling a ton anyway. And so fans were nostalgic for these games. Fans are nostalgic for these games. They'll buy them regardless of the state that they're in. That doesn't mean that they should ship them, you know, in a poor state, but throw these games to a company that can handle that, you know, and put GTA 4 on modern consoles with, you know, like some, first of all, I would love to be able to play this game without like the wet mud sepia tone filter over the entire thing that was so endemic of what was happening for so many games of that era. So no fault to GTA for that, because that's just, that was the style back then. That's what people did. But there's so much cool stuff here. And obviously the fan modding community on PC continues to rule, and they modernize these things, and they, you know, they make these things infinitely playable on future systems forever. But in terms of console players, they don't get to experience these games the way I think that they should. And so I wish that they would rethink the strategy. I wish they would work with the studio that would properly modernize GTA 4 and bring it to PS5. Because that would be super cool. I think fans would love it, would sell a ton, and would hold people over until GTA 6 comes out, which feels to me like is still very far away.
Yeah. I think we're a ways out from it as well. And I agree. I do think, to your point, probably as much as it sold very well, probably the reception to those remasters of the other GTA games might have been a potential reason for this. Like, why risk having that happen again when they, I guess, don't feel like they need to financially. But I agree. I think like there's a world where you can have these come out. They can be things that people get excited about. Hopefully they can be in a good state, and you can still probably focus pretty well on GTA 6.
Yeah, it's a bummer about Red Dead, only because Red Dead also never even came to PC, and the GTA 4 version of on PC is, like Brian said, it needs to be like heavily modded, I think, to work correctly, because it was a Windows game, which that service like doesn't exist anymore. Like, I forget what it was called, but so it kind of sucks, yeah, that there's not an easy way to play those games. I can picture a world like, they didn't make the original trilogy remakes, right? But then they still get accused of like spending resources that should be on GTA 6. So I guess in one way it's a very good thing for them to just be like, you know what, we're done. We have our GTA 5 team that's going to work on GTA 5, you know, forever. Unless GTA 6, you know, GTA Online, sorry, is what I mean. But it's like, I can picture them finally just, I'm glad that they're finally just like, you know what, GTA 6 is now our priority. Because, you know, you have to assume it takes some resources for them to like check in on these ports and stuff like that. And they're like, you know what, every single person now, if you're not working on GTA 6, you're working on the wrong thing kind of deal. Right. So I guess there's some hope there. But yeah, it's GTA 4 is a game that I've played a lot and I like a lot. That game also shows quite a bit of age, not even just in the graphics, but in the driving and stuff as well. Then GTA 5, like, that game kind of feels like you're driving on a bar of soap. So I'm curious if that's something that they'd want to address, and that's why. But I don't know, I'm really sad about Red Dead, because Red Dead just is like, it spawned this huge, you know, nobody remembers Red Dead Revolver. Red Dead Redemption is the game that, you know, is what makes people Red Dead fans now, and like, it kind of sucks that the game, it didn't even get a PC port. That kind of sucks.
That is weird. But, yeah, I mean, I maintain that like, if there was a couple of like different quality of life stuff in Red Dead Redemption 2 that they could have made a game that I think connected with just an even grander audience than it did. We talked about God of War before. God of War beat Red Dead in pretty much most major Game of the Year categories. The year these both came out in 2018, right? And I think famously, like, a lot of people really, really, really loved Red Dead. They also really wanted to get into it. And it was just a tick too slow and too tedious with a couple of little things like walking and riding and animations and picking stuff up. And whoa, hold on there. It was like a lot of that kind of stuff. And it's also
a different kind of game for sure.
It's a different kind of game for sure. And I don't know if that's what people kind of expected after GTA 5. But also, there's a low ceiling on how you can scope endless amounts of content for a period piece versus something like GTA 5, where you could just be like, hey, guess what? There's like hovercrafts in the game now, and like gold helicopters and, you know, jetpacks and all this other fun stuff. Whereas Red Dead, you're kind of just like, you know, you're kind of glued to that whole old timey horsey stuff, which is cool for people that want that world. But it's unsurprising to me. I think we predicted this out the gate that this wouldn't scale to the same levels of popularity that GTA 5 did. I mean, what can? Nothing can.
There's nothing like
I've played a lot of Red Dead Online, and it's like, it doesn't matter how cool some of the new horses are. It doesn't matter what kind of guns you can give somebody. Like, you're never going to beat giving the world the Batmobile or, like, the DeLorean, right? And, like, that's the uphill battle Red Dead always had. And they kind of famously don't really support it as much as they support Red Dead Online GTA Online, because they know that it's like, it's never going to have that, like, that wave of players that GTA has. But yeah, I don't know. But I'm also very, very excited for GTA 6. So I'm not going to be incredibly sad at the news that we're not getting remakes of the old games because they're working on the new game. It's time.
Well, you can look forward to playing PlayStation 6's GTA 6, because I think that game is quite a ways off at this point.
Oh, man. I hope.
I think so, too.
It's at least a few years, I would, yeah. But yeah, sad that at least for now, allegedly, we won't be getting a revisit of those two games, but still plenty to look forward to in the months to come. And yeah, whenever we get a morsel of small GTA 6 news, we'll be sure to talk about it here on the show. Speaking of old games, I'm not going to go on very long about it. I have actually been playing the original Final Fantasy VII for the first time, because like you, Mark, I got so excited by that Square Enix, basically FF7 Direct with the Crisis Core and Remake Part 2 reveals, that I just kind of wanted to jump back into that world, and I've never played the original 7, so I'm playing it on like the PS4 streamlined version, barely doing battles, mostly just exploring it for the story and the world and really getting into it. But I mentioned that because our memory card this week, before we wrap up, relates to Final Fantasy VII. So memory cards, if you would like to write in with yours, please write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, with your sad, weird, happy, wacky, whatever memories of your PlayStation life, and we'll read them on the show each and every week. This one comes from Brian, who, different Brian than the one on the show, I think.
Brian, you wrote to us? That's so cool.
No other way to get in touch with you guys. I just had to.
I refuse to speak to you unless you email me. Brian wrote in and said, first off, thank you all for keeping us entertained weekly. I'm a UPS driver, and your podcast is one of a few that helped me get through my day much easier. I'd also like to thank Mark Bedina for mentioning Brave Fencer Musashi in a few podcasts a couple months ago and bringing back one of my favorite video game memories. Final Fantasy VII has been my favorite game since it came out in 1997, maybe before that, since I played the demo maybe 50 times in the months leading up to that release. Everything about that game was perfect to me, and after putting in hundreds of hours into it and doing everything possible, I couldn't wait for the next one. The following summer, I heard that the demo for FF8 would be released with a game I'd never heard of, Brave Fencer Musashi. Not only that, looking in the back of one of the magazines I subscribed to, I saw a page for a mail-order video game store called Game Cave that showed that it was already released in Japan and that you could buy the import from their store. On the bottom of the page, there was an address for their company located in Monrovia, California, and looking it up, I realized that would be a small 30-minute detour or so on the way to Disneyland, where my best friend and I were headed a couple weeks later. We drove 6 hours from the Bay Area down there on the first day of our vacation, where we found Game Cave. I remember being shocked at how small the place was, but I guess it made sense with the majority of their sales coming through the mail. I told the guy behind the counter I would like to buy a copy of the game, and he grabbed it for me. As he was ringing me up, he asked me, "You do have your PlayStation modded, right?" To which I replied, "What?" He proceeded to explain that in order to play Japanese games, my PlayStation would have to have a chip put into it to allow my console to read the discs. He saw the defeated look on my face, but assured me it would be okay because they could mod my system there for a small fee. I then explained that I live 400 miles north and that wouldn't be possible. He thought for a few seconds and then told me to hang tight. He went into the back and a few minutes later came out with a piece of paper in a Ziploc bag. In it was a chip with a few wires hanging from it, and the piece of paper was a photocopy of the inside of a PlayStation. He handed them to me and gave me a few pointers on how to solder the chip into place. He didn't charge me a penny for it, other than the $80 to buy the import game. But I was equally excited and nervous about performing surgery on my beloved console that I had spent my hard-earned money on. When I returned from my vacation the following week, I cleared off the table, followed the instructions, and successfully installed the chip. I popped in the demo. I can't believe this is all for a demo, which is incredible. I popped in the demo for FF8 and let out a sigh of relief as the Squaresoft logo appeared on my screen. After being slightly disappointed with the demo, I tried Brave Fencer out. I was instantly hooked with the gameplay, and less than a week later had passed the game while understanding absolutely nothing about the story. A few months later, I bought the English version of the game and loved playing through it while actually understanding what I was fighting for. Also bought Vagrant Story at the time, one of the most underrated and overlooked PS1 games ever. If you happen to read this on the podcast, and if the Game Cave clerk from the summer of 1998 is listening, thank you. And Brian, thank you for writing in. I'm glad that all worked out for you. I have never done any sort of surgery on any of my consoles. I know a lot of people kind of first did something close to that with the hard drives for the PS5. Like, that's, I think, the closest a lot of people have come to.
Which is
recently.
Like the easiest thing ever.
Exactly. But yeah, I was always too afraid to touch my consoles.
I remember there
like
was one of the 3DSs you had to unscrew the back plate to put a SD card in.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was dumb. That's about as far as I've gotten. I've never actually... I did modify Joy-Cons before, but I've never taken apart a console. If you can do that, you're brave, and power to you. I respect you.
I always feared the warranty and that the police would come for me if I broke it. So yeah. Brian, both on the show and both writing in, thank you for your time. And Brian, thank you at home for writing in. And if you would like to write in to beyond@ign.com with your memory card stories, we'll read them on the show each week. But that is pretty much going to do it for this week's episode of Beyond. Ragnarok is coming. We have a date for it. It's actually on the way. Very, very excited about it.
We did it, boys.
Brian and Mark, thank you both so much for joining me. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Brian is at Agent Bizzle, and Mark is at Mark_Medina. Thank you, as always, to Red, our producer, for making the show happen as well. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe and healthy. And as always, beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.